The ceremony lasted 12 minutes. He never once looked at her face. Alara remembered every second of it, the cold weight of the ring sliding onto her finger, the Archbishop's voice echoing through the chapel, the way Alexander Grey, Duke of Greystone, stared fixedly at a point just above her shoulder, as if she were a piece of furniture that had been placed in his line of sight against his will. When the vows ended, he turned and walked back down the aisle without offering his arm. She had to hurry to follow, the train of her ivory gown catching on the stone floor, the whispers rising like smoke behind her. That was the first day she understood her husband wished she were someone else. The carriage ride to Greystone Hall passed in silence so complete she could hear her own heartbeat. Alexander sat opposite, rigid and immaculate, one hand resting on his knee. The autumn countryside rolled past the window, golden and indifferent. Alara folded her hands in her lap and tried to shrink into the velvet seat. She had imagined this journey 100 times as a girl. The shy smiles, the tentative conversation, the beginning of something tender. Instead, she received a profile carved from stone, and the distinct impression that she had already failed at something she had not known she was being tested on. Greystone Hall rose from the landscape like a fortress of secrets. Alara stepped down from the carriage and looked up at the endless rows of windows, the gray stone darkened by rain, the ivy clinging to the walls like desperate fingers. A line of servants stood waiting, their faces carefully blank. The housekeeper, Mrs. Brimley, curtsied and murmured words of welcome, but Alara saw the flicker of uncertainty in the older woman's eyes. Everyone knew this marriage had been forced. Everyone knew the Duke had not chosen her. The first week dissolved into a blur of empty rooms and echoing corridors. Alexander took his meals in his study. When they passed in the hallway, he inclined his head with frigid politeness and continued walking. She ate breakfast alone at a table that could seat 30, the clink of her spoon against porcelain magnified by the silence. At night, she lay in the vast bedchamber assigned to the Duchess, separate from his, naturally, and listened to the wind moan through the chimney. Still, hope is a stubborn thing. It burrows into the heart and refuses to be dislodged. Alara told herself that he needed time. The marriage had been arranged to settle a dispute between their families, a tangled knot of debts and obligations that she did not fully understand. Her father was gone now, and there had been no one left to explain. Perhaps Alexander simply resented the circumstances, and his coldness was not meant for her personally. Perhaps if she were patient, if she were kind, he would soften. So she began her quiet campaign. She learned from Mrs. Brimley that he preferred his tea strong with no sugar, and she began preparing a fresh pot for him each morning and leaving it outside his study door. She did not knock. She did not linger. She simply left the tray and walked away. The first day, the tray remained untouched. The second day, the pot was empty when she came to retrieve it. That small gesture felt like a victory, and she carried it close to her heart all day. She began to tend the neglected garden behind the east wing. Greystone Hall had once been famous for its roses, but they had gone wild and tangled in the years since the previous Duchess died. Alara put on a plain gown and worked alongside the gardener, her hands growing calloused, her hair escaping its pins. She thought that if she restored beauty to the estate, perhaps he would notice. Perhaps he would look at her and see someone who loved his home as much as he did. One afternoon, a fortnight after the wedding, she looked up from pruning a thorny bush and saw him standing at the window of his study. He was watching her. Their eyes met for a single heartbeat, the first time he had truly looked at her since the altar, and then he turned away, the curtain falling back into place. Alara stood frozen, a drop of blood welling on her finger where a thorn had pierced her glove. She did not feel the pain. She felt only the strange, flickering warmth of being seen. That evening, she dared to hope. At dinner, she dressed carefully in a gown of soft blue, the color of twilight. She wore no jewels, remembering that the late Duchess had apparently been fond of sapphires, and she did not wish to invite comparison. She sat at the long table and waited. When Alexander entered, she rose and offered a tentative smile. "Your Grace, I thought we might dine together this evening." He paused. For a moment, something unreadable moved behind his eyes, surprise, perhaps, or the ghost of courtesy. Then his expression shuddered. "I have urgent correspondence," he said. "I will take supper in my study." He left before she could respond. The footmen stood motionless against the walls, trained to pretend they had seen and heard nothing. Ilara sat back down and looked at the empty chair across from her. The candles guttered. The soup grew cold. She picked up her spoon and ate alone, because she had learned long ago that pride was a luxury orphans could not afford. The months that followed taught her harder lessons. She discovered, gradually and painfully, that Alexander's distance was not merely the awkwardness of a new marriage. It was deliberate. It was a wall built brick by brick, and every time she found a small crack, he sealed it again before she could slip through. There were moments, fleeting, agonizing moments, when she glimpsed something gentler beneath the surface. Once, she caught a chill walking home from the village in the rain, and the next morning a fire had been lit in her chambers before she woke, though she had not ordered it. Another time, she mentioned in passing that the tenants in the north cottages needed new blankets for the winter, and 3 days later a cartload of wool arrived from the nearest market town. He never spoke of these things. He never acknowledged them. He simply acted, and then retreated into his silence as if afraid that any kindness would be mistaken for affection. But the small mercies were outweighed by the vast, empty spaces between them. She learned, too, that she was not the only woman who occupied his thoughts. Lady Clarissa Vane was a widow of impeccable beauty and even more impeccable timing. She appeared at Greystone Hall a month after the wedding, gliding through the front door with the ease of someone who had done so many times before. She was tall and willowy, with hair the color of spun gold and a voice like honey poured over glass. "Your Grace," she said, curtsying to Alexander with a smile that held a dozen shared secrets. "It has been too long." Alexander's face did something Ilara had never seen it do. It softened. He took Lady Clarissa's hand and raised it to his lips, a gesture of gallantry he had never once offered his wife. "Clarissa," he said, "you are always welcome." Ilara stood in the corner of the entrance hall, her hands clasped in front of her, feeling herself shrink. She was the Duchess. This was her home, and yet she felt like an intruder who had wandered into a private scene. Lady Clarissa stayed for 3 weeks. She accompanied Alexander on rides across the estate. She sat beside him at dinner, filling the silence with witty stories and knowing glances, while Ilara sat at the opposite end of the table, pushing food around her plate. Clarissa never spoke to her with anything less than polished courtesy, but her eyes said something else entirely, a faint, amused pity, as if Ilara were a stray dog that had been allowed into the house and would eventually be put out. One evening, Ilara passed the drawing room and heard them talking. She should have kept walking. She did not. "You must be patient, Alexander," Clarissa was saying, her voice low and intimate. "These political marriages are never easy, but you have done your duty. No one expects more." "Duty," he repeated, his tone flat. "Is that supposed to be a comfort?" "It is the truth. You cannot let guilt dictate your life." Ilara pressed her palm against the cold wall and closed her eyes. Guilt. Not love, not even tolerance, guilt. He felt guilty. Perhaps for marrying her at all. Perhaps for not being able to love her. Perhaps for loving someone else entirely. She never learned which it was, because she walked away before she could hear more. That night she lay awake and stared at the canopy of her bed. The hope that had stubbornly refused to die finally flickered and went out. Something inside her shifted, not all at once, but slowly, like a tide retreating from the shore. She would stop trying. She would stop waiting for him to see her. She would become a ghost in her own life if that was what he required, but she would not beg for love. Not ever again. The change was subtle at first. The next morning she did not prepare his tea. She slept late, and when she finally came downstairs, she took her breakfast in the conservatory with a book, ignoring the dining room entirely. When Alexander appeared in the doorway, A faint frown creasing his brow as if he had noticed an unexpected absence, she merely looked up and said, "Good morning, Your Grace," with the same distant politeness he had always used on her. Then she returned to her reading. He stood there for a moment, then he left. That was the beginning of her retreat. Alara turned her attention outward, away from the cold center of the house. She threw herself into the work of the estate with a fervor that surprised everyone, including herself. She visited the tenant cottages, learning each family by name, noting which children needed shoes and which roofs leaked when it rained. She reorganized the household accounts, discovering decades of neglected inefficiencies and quietly correcting them. She revived the garden, not for him anymore, but because the roses deserved to bloom, and so did she. The servants began to look at her differently. Where once they had been polite and distant, they now brought her small problems to solve, trusting her judgment. Mrs. Brimley, who had served the Gray family for 30 years, started saving a special pastry for Alara's afternoon tea, a silent gesture of affection. The tenants began to leave small gifts at the kitchen door, a basket of eggs, a bundle of wildflowers, tokens of gratitude that meant more to her than any jewel. She was becoming the Duchess she had always hoped she could be, but she was doing it entirely without him. At first, Alexander seemed to notice nothing. He remained in his study, immersed in his ledgers and his letters and his carefully maintained solitude. Lady Clarissa had departed, but her absence did not draw him toward his wife. If anything, he seemed even more isolated, a man retreating into a fortress of his own making. But slowly, inevitably, he began to feel the shift. It started with small things. He noticed that his tea no longer appeared outside his study door. He noticed that Alara no longer lingered in the hallway when he passed, hopping for a moment of connection. She moved through the house with a quiet, self-contained grace, her gaze never seeking his. When they dined together, which was rare, she spoke only of estate matters, her tone calm and efficient, as if she were a steward giving a report rather than a wife sharing her life. At first he told himself this was what he wanted, peace, distance, the absence of emotional entanglement, but the silence she left behind was not peaceful, it was hollow. One afternoon he emerged from his study and wandered toward the east garden, drawn by a sound he could not immediately identify. It was laughter, not the brittle, polished laughter of society, but the warm, unfettered kind. He rounded the hedge and stopped. Alara was kneeling in the dirt, her gown smudged with soil, a wide-brimmed straw hat slipping over her eyes. Beside her knelt a man he recognized, Lord Henry Ashby, the younger son of a neighboring estate, a man with an easy smile and a reputation for kindness. He was holding a trowel, and the two of them were laughing together over some shared joke, their heads bent close. Alexander's stomach tightened. He did not move. He simply stood there, half hidden by the hedge, watching his wife smile at another man with a warmth she had never once directed at him. Henry Ashby said something that made her laugh again, and then he reached out and brushed a streak of dirt from her cheek with an ungloved hand. The gesture was casual, unthinking, and entirely improper. Alara did not flinch. She simply smiled and said something too soft for Alexander to hear. The tightness in his stomach became something sharper. He did not have a name for it yet, but it burned. That evening, he found himself at the dinner table without having planned to be there. Alara was already seated, and Lord Henry Ashby had been invited to stay. The three of them ate together, and Alexander was forced to watch as Ashby engaged his wife in lively conversation, asking her opinion on crop rotation and tenant welfare, and a dozen other topics that Alexander had never thought to discuss with her. She answered with intelligence and warmth, her eyes bright with interest. She had never looked at Alexander that way, not once. "You are remarkably knowledgeable about estate management, Your Grace," Ashby said, raising his glass in a small toast. "Greystone is fortunate to have you." "I agree," Alexander said, his voice cutting through the conversation like a blade. Both Alara and Ashby turned to look at him, startled. He rarely spoke at dinner, and the words had come out harder than he intended. Ilara's expression flickered, surprise. Then a guarded caution, as if she were bracing herself for something unpleasant. "I merely meant," Alexander continued, forcing his tone into something more neutral, "that the Duchess has proven herself capable. The estate has improved under her care." It was the first compliment he had ever given her. It landed between them like a stone dropped into still water, sending ripples in every direction. Ilara looked down at her plate, and for a moment he thought he saw a tremor in her hands. "Thank you," she said quietly, but she did not look at him. Henry Ashby stayed for another hour. When he finally departed, pressing a kiss to Alara's hand that lingered a moment too long, Alexander felt the sharp thing in his chest twist again. That night, he did not go to his study. He stood at the window of his bedchamber and stared out at the darkened garden, trying to understand what was happening to him. He had spent 2 years building walls around his heart, 2 years telling himself that this marriage was a prison, that Ilara was a symbol of obligations he had never wanted. He had treated her with coldness because it was easier than facing the truth, that he did not know how to be a husband, that he was afraid of failing her the way his father had failed his mother, that he had let guilt and resentment curdle into something that was poisoning them both. And now, watching her slip away, he was terrified. The following week brought rain and a fever that swept through the tenant village. Ilara spent her days there, ignoring the weather, delivering broth and medicine with her own hands. Alexander watched her leave each morning, a determined figure in a heavy cloak, and felt a helplessness he could not articulate. Mrs. Brimley found him standing in the entrance hall one afternoon, staring at the door as if willing it to open. "She'll catch her death out there," he said, not realizing he had spoken aloud. The housekeeper looked at him with a mixture of surprise and something gentler. "She is stronger than she appears, Your Grace. She always has been." He turned to her, and for the first time in years his mask slipped. "I have not been kind to her." Mrs. Brimley held his gaze. "No, Your Grace, you have not." The honesty should have angered him. Instead, it cracked something open inside his chest. That night, Ilara returned late, soaked and shivering. Alexander was waiting in the entrance hall, another first. She stopped when she saw him, water dripping from the hem of her cloak onto the marble floor. "Your Grace," she said, cautious, "is something wrong?" "You are ill," he said, his voice rougher than he intended. He crossed the space between them before he could think, his hand rising to touch her cheek. Her skin was cold, but beneath it he could feel the heat of a rising fever. She flinched. She actually flinched as if his touch were something to be feared. The motion stopped him cold. "I am fine," she said, stepping back. "It is only the rain." "You are not fine." He heard the command in his own voice, the old habit of distance, and hated it. He forced himself to soften. "Please, let someone tend to you." She searched his face for a long moment, trying to understand this sudden concern. He could see the wariness in her eyes, the protective walls she had built. He had put them there. "Very well," she said at last, and allowed Mrs. Brimley to lead her upstairs. Alexander stood alone in the hall, the sound of her footsteps fadding above him. He pressed his hand against the wall and closed his eyes, the full weight of his regret settling onto his shoulders. He had been so determined not to be bound by this marriage that he had bound her instead to loneliness, to neglect, to the cold shadow of a man who could not see what was in front of him until it was almost gone. The fever kept Ilara in bed for 3 days. Alexander did not sleep. He haunted the corridor outside her room, listening for every cough, every murmur. He sent for the best physician from London. He ordered the servants to keep the fires burning day and night. He did all the things he should have done from the beginning, and every one of them felt like a penance that came too late. When she was well enough to sit up, he finally entered her room. She was propped against pillows, pale and fragile in the morning light, and the sight of her struck him with a force he could not explain. He had nearly lost her. Not to Henry Ashby, not to distance but to fever, to the simple cruelty of chance, and the thought hollowed him out. "I was afraid," he said, the words tearing themselves from somewhere deep. "I was afraid you would die." Ilara looked at him for a long, silent moment. There was no triumph in her expression, no vindication, only a tired, gentle sadness. "Would it have mattered?" she asked. "Would I have been missed?" The question was not cruel. She was not trying to wound him. She was simply asking, with the quiet honesty of someone who had long ago stopped expecting love. Alexander sank onto the chair beside her bed and dropped his head into his hands. "Forgive me," he whispered. "Forgive me for everything." She did not answer immediately. The silence stretched between them, heavy with all the words they had never said. Then she reached out and touched his hand lightly, tentatively, as if she were not quite sure she was allowed. "I do not want your guilt," she said. "I never did. I only wanted you to see me." "I see you now." He lifted his head, and his eyes were wet in a way he had not allowed since boyhood. "I see you, Ilara. I have been blind and cruel and stupid, and I have wasted 2 years that I can never get back. But I see you." She studied his face, searching for the truth beneath the words. He did not look away. He let her see everything, the regret, the longing, the desperate, terrified hope that he had not destroyed his chance forever. At last she nodded, a small, fragile motion. "Then do not look away again." He took her hand and held it as if it were the most precious thing in the world. "Never," he said, "never again." Healing, unlike confession, does not happen in a single moment. It is built day by day, through small gestures and quiet words and the slow, painstaking work of learning to trust again. Alexander began by leaving his study door open. He began by appearing at breakfast, not out of obligation but because he wanted to be where she was. He asked her about the estate, and then he asked her about herself, her childhood, her dreams, the book she loved, the song she hummed when she thought no one was listening. She answered cautiously at first, still bracing for the coldness to return, but it did not return. He walked with her in the garden she had restored. He knelt beside her and pulled weeds, his fine coat forgotten in the dirt. He listened when she pointed out a new rose, her voice soft with pride, and he told her it was beautiful. He was not talking about the rose. One evening, they sat together on the terrace as the sun sank behind the hills. The sky was a tapestry of amber and rose, and the air smelled of lavender from the garden below. Ilara leaned her head against his shoulder, a gesture so natural, and trusting that his heart ached with the gift of it. "I used to dream of this," she murmured, "of sitting here with you without walls between us." He pressed his lips to her hair. "I am sorry it took me so long to find my way to you." She lifted her head and looked at him, her eyes shining. "But you found it." He cupped her face in his hands, his thumbs brushing the curve of her cheeks. "I love you, Ilara. I think I have loved you for a long time and I was too stubborn to admit it, but I am admitting it now. I love you." A tear slipped down her cheek, but she was smiling. "I love you too," she whispered. "I never stopped." He kissed her then, not the hurried, obligatory kiss of a husband performing a duty, but the slow, reverent kiss of a man who had finally understood the value of what he held. The sunset poured gold around them, and for the first time in 2 years, Greystone Hall felt like a home. There was one more truth that needed to be spoken, and it came a fortnight later, in the quiet of his study. Alexander opened a drawer he had kept locked for years and withdrew a bundle of letters tied with a faded ribbon. He handed them to Ilara without a word. She looked at him, questioning, and then untied the ribbon and began to read. The letters were from her father, written to Alexander's father in the years before they both died. They told a story she had never known, a story of a desperate friendship, a collapsing fortune, and a sacrifice made in secret. Her father had given everything he had to save the Gray family from ruin, not out of obligation, but out of love for his old friend. The marriage contract had not been a trap. It had been a promise between two dying men who wanted their children to find in each other what they had found in friendship, loyalty, protection, and perhaps even love. Alara read the last letter and let it fall into her lap. "I never knew," she breathed. "He never told me." "Neither did mine," Alexander said. "I only discovered these a year ago, long after I had already treated you as an enemy. I told myself I would make it right, but I did not know how. I was a coward." She reached across the desk and took his hand. "You are not a coward now." He turned his hand over and laced his fingers through hers. "You have given me courage," he said. "You have given me everything." The truth settled over them like a benediction, healing the last of the old wounds. They sat together in the study until the fire burned low, talking of the past and the future, weaving the broken threads of their story into something whole. In the months that followed, Greystone Hall transformed. The cold, silent house became a place of warmth and laughter. The tenants prospered under the Duchess's continued care, and the Duke began to walk among them not as a distant lord, but as a man who had learned the value of connection. Lord Henry Ashby remained a dear friend, and when he eventually married a cheerful young woman from a neighboring county, Alara danced at his wedding with genuine joy. Lady Clarissa Vane returned once, expecting the old familiarity. She found a man who greeted her politely but whose eyes no longer softened at her presence. She found a duchess who stood at his side with quiet confidence, not as a rival, but as a beloved. Clarissa did not stay long. There was no place for her here anymore. And in the garden, beneath the arch of roses that Alara had coaxed back to life, Alexander Gray knelt one summer afternoon and took his wife's hand. "I married you for duty," he said, his voice rough with emotion. "But I would marry you again for love, 1,000 times over, if you would have me." She pulled him to his feet and wrapped her arms around him, her laughter bright as bells. "I would have you every time," she said, "every time." He held her close, the scent of roses all around them, and wondered how he had ever been so blind. The world was full of second chances, but none so precious as this, the chance to love and be loved, the chance to heal what had been broken, the chance to spend the rest of his life proving that he had finally learned to see. And in the years that followed, when people spoke of the Duke and Duchess of Greystone, they did not speak of coldness or distance or duty. They spoke of a love that had grown slowly, painfully, beautifully, a love that had been tested by silence and had emerged stronger than any words could capture. Alara never forgot those first 2 years. She did not want to. They reminded her of how far they had come, and they reminded her to never take a single day of warmth for granted. And Alexander, who had once looked past his wife as if she were invisible, now found himself unable to look away. He carried her smile in his heart like a talisman, and every morning he woke with the quiet, fierce determination to be the man she had always deserved. The story of their love was not a fairy tale. It was something rarer, a story of mistakes, of loss of the long, winding road back to each other. And it was theirs. It was, at last, enough. If you enjoyed this story, don't forget to give it a like and subscribe to the channel. Also, let us know in the comments which country you're watching from. Your support means a lot to us. Thank you for watching and see you in the next amazing story.